Let's spend just a few moments together, shall we, looking at this incident that we read about earlier on and see how we can be encouraged and challenged by it for the week ahead. The woman at the well. Just to give you a scene of the geography of the place, many of you probably already know it, but the Galilee is the little blue blob at the top, and Jerusalem is just here, and Jesus is talking about moving here from Jerusalem up to Galilee, a distance of about 90 miles. And in the middle, there is this place called Samaria, which we'll talk about in just a moment, that he has to pass through. But that gives you a rough idea of the geography. I'm sure most of you already know it. But when this incident takes place, Jesus' ministry is still very new. But he's already created quite a stir. He's called his closest followers, and he's travelled south from Galilee to Jerusalem. We don't know which route he took going south, but it was usual for Jews to avoid going through Samaria for reasons we talk about in just a few moments. In chapter 2 of John, it tells us that he went there to observe the Passover. And when he got there, he went into the temple, and he was appalled by what he saw in the temple forecourts. There was trading going on, and what he finds, he turns into chaos because he overturns the tables in the trader's stalls. The money's thrown on the floor, the doves are released from their cages, the sheep and cattle, potential sacrifices are strewn all over the place because he is appalled at what he sees going on. Later, he has this conversation with Nicodemus, and I'm sure many of you have read that in chapter 3 of John, who came to him by night. Clearly, Jesus is making his mark because the Pharisees get to hear about his actions, and this is where our reading picked up tonight. The Pharisees heard that Jesus was gaining and baptizing more disciples than John. So the fact that Jesus was about was beginning to be understood. But the time was not right for Jesus to be arrested. This is not God's hour yet. So he heads back north to Galilee. And this time he decides to go straight through Samaria instead of taking the longer route, which they often took, which went out beside the river. They came this way, up beside the river, and then back across the top. Or occasionally they would go across by the sea in order to avoid going through Samaria. Why was this an issue? Quick explanation. Well, as Terry said earlier on, in our house groups, shortly we're due to start on the book of Daniel. And about 600 years before this event, before Jesus was born, foreign invaders ransacked Jerusalem and carried off all the nobility and the better educated to improve their own governance. And Daniel was one of those. But they left behind the poor and the uneducated people, and they were left to fend for themselves, and they were just north of Jerusalem. And so, of course, over the years, they tended to marry the people who had invaded them. And in so doing, they had become intermarried. And these people were called Samaritans. Pure Jews, if you want to call them that, saw them as people who'd betrayed their heritage. And they were still at loggerheads in Jesus' day. So Jesus' journey through Samaria was fraught with tension. But he goes with his team, and they arrive about midday at a well just outside of a little place called Sychar, or Shechem as it was in the Old Testament, about halfway up. Jesus' followers go off to buy food, and Jesus himself rests by the well. A lady on her own comes to fetch the water. Verses 6 and 7 tell us this woman is isolated. She's on her own. It's midday, it's hot. She's there getting the water when no one else is. They come early in the morning, they come late in the evening, but she's there at the middle of the day, all on her own. Verse 18 might give us a clue as to why she's on her own. She's had 5 husbands. Had she been widowed 5 times? Was she a pain to live with and therefore been divorced several times? Was it a mixture of both? Did people just not like her lifestyle? Whatever it was, she finds herself having to draw water at the hottest part of the day when no one else is around. And here, if you like, lies the first challenge for those of us who are Christians. Do we marginalise those who don't fit our norm? Maybe deliberately, or maybe unintentionally. Do we seek out and gravitate towards those who are like us? Or do we really go out of our way to reach everyone and anyone with the gospel? On the other hand, there may be someone here tonight, despite the fact of being in a crowd, you feel isolated. You feel that you're not part of the mainstream, probably completely unknown to anybody else, but somehow you are feeling that you're not really part of what's going on. Let me reassure you that Jesus puts himself and his entourage out, make it difficult for themselves to meet with this single, lonely woman. He spends time with her. He offers her hope. He offers her love. Tonight, he'll do the same for you if you are feeling that you are left out. I encourage you to engage with him, to draw in with him. Jesus initiates a conversation with this woman. He asks her for water. I don't intend to go through the conversation in detail, but suffice it to say, it covers a discussion around water, what it is, how to get hold of it. They talk about spiritual thirst. They talk about her marital status. And they have an exchange of views on the hot topic of the day, which was about where and how to worship God, because they had different views as Jews and Samaritans. However, there are a couple of things I think it's worth just having a quick look at. One is in verse 15. Verse 15 says, "The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water so that I won't get thirsty and have to keep coming here to draw water.'" She thinks she won't have to come to the well again. She's looking for a personal, temporal solution. She doesn't understand that what Jesus is offering is spiritual. Even though she was living in an age where religion and spiritual things were very high on the agenda, there are masses of Roman gods and Greek gods and goodness knows what around them. And the whole of society was very religion-orientated. But she doesn't understand what Jesus is saying when he talks to her about the living water. If we as Christians are seeking to share the gospel, we shouldn't be surprised if it's the same when we talk to others about the gospel. People may not understand it immediately. It may take time for them to grasp it. So don't be disappointed if the result is not instantaneous. It might be too much to expect them to jump straight into something they have no understanding of. But as we shall see in a minute, this lady does so quite quickly. For some, though, it might be a long journey, so we need to build relationships and explain things in a patient and an easily understood way. That's why our lifestyle is so important. People need to see our living example backing up what we say, our consistency reflecting the Saviour. But it's also important for them to see our faith in action, not just having high moral standards. The other verses in this that I'd like to look at are verses 16, 17, and 18. Jesus told her, "Go, call your husband, come back." "I have no husband," she replied. Jesus said to her, "You are right when you say you have no husband. The fact is, you've had five husbands, and the man you now have is not your husband. What you have said is quite true." How is it that someone she's never seen in Sychar ever before knows her history? I wondered how this fitted with the culture at the time. Obviously, her lifestyle and background was not a secret in Sychar itself, probably a fairly small village or town. Maybe she'd been through a lot of pain. Maybe it was her fault. Maybe it wasn't. But there's no judgment from Jesus himself, just a plain statement of fact. This reminds us that our lives, whoever we are an open book to God. Remember the words, "I will never leave you or forsake you." Here is the reassurance for those of you feeling isolated, and a challenge for us all to be out there declaring the gospel. Jesus explains to her need of salvation, how she is a sinner and only he can be her saviour. And what is true yesterday for her is true for us today. We are sinners. We need the same saviour. We need God's own son to provide the cleansing. There's no other way. The conversation concludes and the disciples return, and Jesus tries to explain to them what he's been doing. But you get the impression that the disciples, his followers, found it difficult to understand. Meanwhile, the woman leaves her empty water jar and returns to the town, telling everyone along the way what she's found out and who she has met. So let's move to the climax of the incident, the power of the gospel, verses 39 onwards. Many of the Samaritans from that town believed in him because of the woman's testimony. He told me everything I've ever done. So when the Samaritans came to him, they urged him to stay with them, and he stayed 2 days. And because of his words, many more became believers. This outcast woman, seemingly ostracized by her society, becomes the conduit for many believing in him. You never know where your witness might lead. What if Jesus had asked the opinion of the people of Sychar? I've got some life-changing news for you all here in Sychar. Do you think I could let you know by this woman who you exclude from the groups? What would they have said? Or maybe Jesus could have talked to the mayor or the council officials. Would you like me to communicate with you via the lady who's only allowed to draw water in the heat of the day when no one else is around? No, Jesus chose to talk to this woman straight as it is. The gospel is for all. It is our challenge to keep spreading its good news. God can use any of us, and we do not know what the results will be. 2 final little points. Notice that she witnessed right away. She had no experience or training. She hadn't been on a course. She doesn't even seem to have the contacts because she's there alone. She just said it like it was and got on with it. Surely, if she can do it, we can do it. And the last one. We see that the planting of the seed, if you like, of the gospel, and the harvesting of the crop, i.e. her conversion, her coming to the Saviour, happened in one fairly smooth movement in this case. Jesus explained her need and how it could be satisfied, and she responded. The people understood it, and they responded quickly. Often for us, this is not the case. The planting of the seed and the reaping are well apart. Sometimes someone plants and someone else reaps at a later time. Jesus refers to it in his talk with his disciples. The important thing is that we are working in the fields in one area or the other. Will you resolve to speak to at least one person this week about the Saviour? Not about the church, not about what we did at the weekend, but to speak to someone about the Saviour. And if you don't know Jesus for yourself, will you resolve to find out more about him? Maybe during this week. Or maybe using the Christianity Explored course coming up soon. Take a leaflet. But there are opportunities to find out what Jesus can do for you. And if you know him, there are lots of opportunities to share that with others.